I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up safe space to the independent thinkers out there beholden to no political class. Today's Tuesday. Next hour, we will get into some Tech Tuesday news, kind of leading in with something really concerning. There's a lot of things going on in the Western world these days. It's really kind of interesting to see. It is the most advanced economies, primarily the Western democracies, that seem to all be suffering the same fate. This is globalism, and it is a disaster. As these things happen simultaneously, everything that we've seen during COVID, up to and including today, and we've got some real pressure points right now that are not good signs. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, I kind of pull back the reins a little bit here because, you know, people say, well, it's too dark, it's too negative. I got to tell you, I'm looking across my notes today and saying, what in the world is going on? I had a exchange last night with a couple of friends around a group text, and somebody put out something, I think it was a meme or something, basically saying, showing a picture of a house and saying, you know, this, I can't remember what the time frame was, I should pull it up. You know, 50 years ago, a barber could afford this house with a wife that didn't work and have two kids, this kind of thing, and, you know, live the American dream. And as I am wont to do with my friends, I don't engage in social media arguing with people. I like debates. I'm not a big fan of arguments. They are tedious and boring, and you get nowhere with them, so I don't bang my head against that wall. But, you know, I explained really, you know, this has been going on for 50 years, this hollowing out of the middle class. In the United States, they talk about stock market stuff. They say sometimes when interest rates pop, when currencies decline, they say it happens slowly at first, then all at once. And unfortunately, we don't pay attention to the slowly at first part. And then when it happens all at once, it's really too late to affect anything without going through a severe amount of pain. And yeah, I was talking to my friends and I said, you know, this has been going on for 50 years. People just kind of refuse to see it because we had our streaming services. We got the new iPhones. We had our sports ball. And so we haven't really been paying attention to this. But this hollowing out of the middle class has gone on for quite a while. And it is it's on steroids right now. I got several stories about that today. But I will never stop saying you should look only to your political class in Washington, D.C., and I am an observer of this system because I am not a member of either one of the two major parties. And I'm telling you, both of these two political parties have participated in this. It's 50 years. We have had every single combination of Republicans and Democrats between the White House, the Senate, and the House. Even governorships around the country, we have flip-flopped back and forth between these two parties, giving them equal shot at all kinds of things, and this is where we find ourselves. Now, I know a lot of people listening to me say it's the left, and it does appear to be an urgent issue that the Democrats are unseated for from power for in this November, in the midterms. The problem that the right has is that you don't realize that's not the end of the job. You need to undo a lot of bad policies on the right at the same time if you want to right this ship. It is not about going and voting for the letter, which is what really, I'd say, probably about 80% of the people actually do. They think they've done their duty. This is a 50-year, 60-year hollowing out of the middle class. I'm going to read you some headlines about what's going on in the business world right now. This is an economic show right now because I believe I'm chronicling. I'm going to be able to have a body of work on my podcast. You can go search for The Mike Madison Show on any podcasting platform. I'll have a body of work where I document it. Maybe someday we'll write a book. I can't keep all of these headlines and things that go on in my head, but I'll be able to go back on there, back on that thing, and really be able to kind of chronicle exactly what happened in the great unraveling, which is what we're witnessing right now. First quote of the day, real quick today. Ron Paul said, "I am convinced that there are more threats to American liberty within the 10-mile radius of my office on Capitol Hill than there are in the rest of the globe." Ron Paul, who was a sitting representative from Texas in the House of Representatives, said, "I am convinced there are more threats to American liberty within the 10-mile radius of my office on Capitol Hill than there are in the rest of the globe." And he's dead on right. Apparently, Joe Biden's taking some kind of a victory lap. Who they kill? Al-Zawahiri? I haven't done the research yet. I kind of feel like we've killed him before. I've brought this up many times. People who pay attention, these Muslim names, I got to tell you, they're difficult to pronounce and harder to remember. But people have pointed out during this, air quotes here in the studio, war on terror, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, this war on terror, there have been many times we've killed the same terrorist leader multiple times over several years span. And I guess the American people, also hampered by the fact it's hard to remember these people's names and keep the players straight. We forget. We have the memory of a goldfish, so they can trot out the death of some terrorist leader just about on cue anytime they want to. I got to tell you, terrorist leaders must get very nervous when presidential approval ratings go down, because it always seems to be that when a president is enjoying horrific poll numbers, suddenly they lash out and they kill a terrorist leader. Now, the funny thing about these terrorist leaders is it's kind of like the drug war. They took down El Chapo. Drug war must be over, right? No, there's another guy in his spot before he is processed and in a jail cell. Same thing with these terrorist leaders. I was reading the headlines about it today on Drudge. I didn't click through to the stories, but it went, you know, the last... Zawahiri's dead, Biden says the world's safer, whatever the headlines were. And the last one is this guy the next one? there will be another leader. The CIA will make sure that they've got a new person to, excuse me, did I say that out loud? There will be another leader of terrorist groups, and we will continue this insanity, the war on terror, the same way we do the war on drugs, the war on cancer, the war on poverty, all of the other failed wars that we are fighting. There won't be a lick of difference in what takes place. But Ron Paul is exactly right. The threats to American liberty are within 10 miles radius of Capitol Hill. That's where we should be focusing. Now the world's attention is focused on China. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't understand China's whole dust-up about this stuff. It seems wildly ridiculous to realize this gin-soaked octogenarian Nancy Pelosi is going to land on Taiwan, and that somehow is an international incident to the Chinese. But the bottom line is, Nancy Pelosi is risking World War III on that side of the world, while Joe Biden, the dementia patient, is risking World War III in Eastern Europe. Then this seems completely... Well, I don't know. Maybe someone can call in today and explain to me what the benefit you are getting from Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. What is the great importance that she makes this visit? Republican Party, here's a great quote from Caitlin Johnstone. She said, "If someone criticizing the most dangerous agendas of the most powerful and destructive government on earth looks like Russian propaganda or Chinese propaganda to you, it's because you yourself have been brainwashed by propaganda." I'm not somebody that sits here and is going to rattle sabers with China and say that we need to face off with them militarily and that Taiwan is some kind of a red line for the American people. We can't allow Taiwan to fall under the control of China. I don't want to see that for the people of Taiwan, but there's a large contingency of the Taiwanese people. One of their two major political parties actually wants to be part of China. Really seems like something they need to settle themselves, but particularly people on the right have been propagandized into the idea that we need to fight and die and expend more resources to defend Taiwan now, not just Ukraine in Eastern Europe, now Taiwan in the Pacific. And Nancy Pelosi may kick this whole thing off. It really does seem, actually, the language coming out of China is concerning. I'll put it that way. I don't get what they're so up in arms about. I understand their desire to not see Taiwan be a place that they are supposed enemies control. I get that. But the fact that just this one pickled old lady is about to land on the island, I don't get why they feel like that is such a threat. Believe me, Nancy Pelosi is much more of a threat to the United States on a daily basis than she ever thought about being to China. If I could have the ear of Xi Jinping, I would tell him, believe you me, you may not like her on an island off your coast. We have to deal with her on a daily basis in a very powerful position of governing here in the United States. She is far more of a threat to the United States than she ever thought about being to China. So if they are truly hell-bent and destroying the United States, they would just let Nancy Pelosi come back here and keep doing what she's been doing. But the threats to our liberty, the threats to our way of life, the threats to our middle class are not from Russia. They're not from China. They're not from Al-Qaeda. They're not from Iran. They're not from any of these places. The threats to our way of life, the hollowing out of the middle class, which we'll take a look at in just a second here, all come from within 10 miles of radius of Capitol Hill right here in the United States. I'll be right back. Radio is queen of the nation. They say you better listen to the right side of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. You know, if I can echo the sentiment of one of the advertisers here at WYAB, I've been paying attention to some of these ads for community colleges, particularly homes, advertisers here on the station. And it was something that I was, you know, I was not a community college guy. I went to four-year university. I went to University of Georgia. Then I went to Mississippi State. I had a fantastic college experience. That's the best way I can phrase my college years. My college years were not academics. Was a distant third probably in my participation in school, but I had a great time. I wasn't smart. If I could go back and do that all over again, I could have done both, but I chose not to. Out of my own youthful ignorance, stupidity, but boy, I did have a great time. But as my children got to be older and we started looking at colleges and what my kids wanted to do, so many kids are really not clear on what they want to do when they get out of school. And we've looked at this situation we've put so many young people into with, again, a government-created problem, which is federally backed student loans. If you can fog a mirror, you can run up $120,000, $150,000 in student loans, absolutely no problem, with no concept, no real-world concept of having to pay back that amount of money. They just normalized it. The university is certainly happy to see this money flowing in. It gave them the ability to continue to raise tuitions, made college extremely expensive. And these community colleges are offering such a fantastic deal for people. And I believe it's going to become more and more popular, and I'm not getting paid. They're not actually a sponsor of this particular show. But the fact, you know, you hear them advertise, if you can get a 20 on your ACT, I believe you go to community college for free, for free. And, you know, to anybody who is trying to bring themselves to change their family tree, lift themselves up by their bootstraps, 20 is not a heavy lift on the ACT with a little bit of work. Now, I'm a standardized test guy. for all of my failings and paying attention in class and actually getting good grades, I always smoothed that over by doing very well on standardized tests. Was really responsible for getting me into college and getting me scholarships to college with my standardized testing. But a 20 on the ACT is not much, but when you just stop and think about the amount of money that you can save sending your kids to a community college for a couple of years, and if they do well in the community college, there's scholarships to get them through the rest of 4 years. There's almost no excuse, except for just some level of short-sightedness of paying for a four-year tuition, particularly for the first couple of years where your kids are just taking, you know, classes they can take anywhere. We saw during COVID, some of the kids, my son's been at college, and he was at college through COVID for about a year, year and a half there. Most of his classes were online. He was sitting in an apartment we had to pay for out of town to take a bunch of online classes because our institutes of higher learning are so ignorant that they bought into this COVID hype with a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds that this disease was absolutely no threat to. Of course, adults projecting their fear onto younger generations as we do. We freaked them out and forced them, robbed them of a year, 18 months of their life. But to go to these schools, I mean, there's almost no excuse. And when my kids were getting to the time, I basically let them know, hey, if you get scholarships, I'd love for you to have the four-year college experience, move away from home, go do your thing. It was great for me. I wouldn't want to deny my children that. But I said, there better be some good grades, some good standardized tests, and some scholarships involved, because there's just no way you're going and toting, you know, $15,000 a year in student loans to go, or I'm just not going to come off that money to pay for it if you have no idea what you want to do. You can take community college. It was one of those things that I was really unaware of until I had kids entering college. But if you were looking for a way to get your kid to college and not let them come out with $100,000, $60,000, I don't care, $50,000 or $30,000 in student loans, and these community colleges are offering a lot of kids a pathway to a full four-year college degree for basically nothing but living expenses. If you just aspire to what are really some pretty achievable goals. So just a tip of the hat to the community colleges that are probably filling the gap. As we go through these economic numbers, I'm telling you, the world is changing. This idea that the American middle class, the idea is that you raise your kids, you send them off to college, they get a great job. That's really what we've thought it was, right? I mean, I lived out in Madison, Mississippi. It was like Mayberry, and that was the idea for most of the kids out there. You send your kids to Madison County Schools. They can go to at least a state university. If they do well, they can pretty much go anywhere they want to in the country. You get some good standardized testing, then you go get your four-year degree, and then you set off for a successful life. But I'm telling you, the landscape is changing. These givens of just heading off to a four-year university and getting a bunch of student loans for whatever it costs, or spending large amounts of money if you're in the upper middle class to send your kids to college, regardless of their grade performance, I think those days are ending. I think the universities are about to be in for a rude awakening, particularly after what they put the kids through when it came to COVID. They charged the same tuitions they did for kids to sit on the couch and take classes by Zoom because of the hypochondria of the colleges, led by the hypochondria of everybody else. I mean, it's just, I think those days are changing. And I've been predicting this for probably about 15 years as I really saw the very beginning of the student loan crisis. You saw these kids coming out of school with tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loans. I think I've talked about it before. A local university here, when student loans, when they really started kind of being the fog a mirror, when the feds stood in and said, oh, we'll guarantee all these loans, and then we'll make sure these kids can't bankrupt out of them. I mean, it's a mafia-style operation. And when we saw these things, there were universities that saw that and went, oh, wow, anybody can get money to go to college now. And they started offering some adult education classes, and it was really, really sad to see, because I attended some of these things, and I saw people who were trying to make a better life for themselves, but the schools weren't really interested in teaching them as much as they were interested in just getting some of that $30,000 tuition to get them through an adult ed program to get them a college degree. These were people that were coming from the chicken houses in Morton, Mississippi. They were tired of being on the assembly lines, and they would come into class, and it was so obvious that the first 12 years of education had not prepared them for much of anything. That's why they were working in the chicken houses. But they were convinced that if they took out $30,000 of student loans, they could go get an adult degree, and this would suddenly thrust them into some VP of a bank somewhere and live the American dream. Listen to these poor people who, again, had not been prepared for anything through their 12 years of regular education, stand up in front of a class, and they were barely able to read and write. Yet the college took their $30,000 and socially promoted them through these classes. You don't want to flunk a bunch of these people out, because then the word will get around, don't take out that $30,000 in loans because you may fail out of class. So they were just socially promoted through these things, through these classes. They were given a degree, but as soon as they showed up for an interview for some white-collar job, some cushy job where they might have been able to make a lot of money, their communication skills were so poor that I would imagine a lot of the people that I encountered are probably still working at the chicken houses trying to pay off the $30,000 in tuition for their adult program. It was really sad to see. Yeah, I think things are changing. I think the nature of education is going to change all the way up from kindergarten through elementary school all the way through college. I think we're going to see a big change, particularly as the schools continue to go woke and fail to educate children. We're seeing the rise of homeschooling at the lower levels, and I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of changes at the collegial level too, as they continue to increase the cost and put more burden on people coming out of schools. If there's not a whole lot of jobs waiting for kids coming out of college, some parents might step in and say, taking out $100,000 worth of student loans to get out into a job market where there aren't many jobs because we've allowed our political class to hollow out our economy, it's probably not going to be real attractive to people. I think it's going to be a development. We'll see. But I've been thinking this was going to happen for the last 10 or 15 years, and so far I've been pretty wrong. We'll see. When you come back, I do want to look at some of these economic numbers. I was compelled by this commercial from Holmes Community College. They are offering a fantastic deal for anybody who wants to get their kids through a college education. You've got the opportunity to do it for just barely anything, almost no cost whatsoever. So much better than saddling your kids with all of this debt. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. That bump music is No Phone by the great band Cake. It has a special meaning to me this morning. Last night, I left my phone somewhere and drove 30 minutes home and realized I'd forgotten my phone. Now, I could be accused of rebelling against technology stuff. I believe these phones are damaging to us. If everybody agreed to it all at once, I'm happy going back to just like a phone at the house, probably an answering machine. An answering machine is nice to know if somebody needs to leave a message or you know who called. I could go there, but I'd be fine with when we're out and about, we're unreachable. I lived an entire life, many of us did, where you left the house and, good luck finding you for a while. When you got to the office, you were reachable again. But if you went out, I remember getting large groups of my friends together, and we would all go to New Orleans in several different cars. Somehow we all found each other and had a great time. There was no need for cell phones. All that being said, I got to tell you, I had something that was close to a panic attack when I realized I had left my phone. It was 30 minutes away. I backed back out of the driveway to start to go back, and then I said, this is ridiculous. My first thought was I use it for my alarm clock, but I do have an iPad, so I relied on that. But I'm telling you, I did not get a good night's sleep last night, and it wasn't that I was stressing about the phone, but I was worried about whether my other alarm was going to work and thinking, well, I got to get up early and go get the phone first before I go into sleep. I've had a bad night's sleep. If this is a poor quality radio show for today, I'm a victim of my own negligence with my own technology. Anyway, the name of that song was No Phone. Just made me think of it. Here is there are some of the headlines of what's going on right now. And this really is incredibly sad to me. I've owned several small businesses during my life. I've been self-employed most of my life. No office jobs, 401ks, those kinds of things. I've owned different businesses or been a contractor, independent contractor for other people. So I've got a real soft spot. And obviously here at WYAB, we are entirely sponsored by small local businesses. I'm a big fan of Main Street and the assault that Main Street has been under for quite a period of time right now is incredibly sad to me. It's unfair. As a libertarian, I understand this probably better than others because this assault has been going on for a while. Small business owners succeed in spite of the government. Everything from local to state to federal government. All of the rules, regulations, permissions you must need to operate a business, all the hoops you have to jump through. This is one of the reasons I do like partnering with Americans for Prosperity here. They're about removing a lot of these roadblocks to allowing people to start businesses. Speaking of that, tonight, Americans for Prosperity has got their torchbearers meeting at 6 o'clock at their office in Ridgeland. Go to Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook. You can see what they're up to. Well, this is about trying to get some local leaders together that are interested in, you know, some level of activism. And Americans for Prosperity, their biggest thing is prosperity. That's what they focus in on. It's not always the sexiest stuff. People want to get every organization involved in the culture war. But I got to tell you, particularly when it comes to Mississippi, trying to free innovation and small businesses in Mississippi is as important as it is anywhere else in this entire country. Mississippi trailing so far behind in many economic areas. But I just have got a real soft spot for small independent businesses. And listen to some of these numbers that are going on right now. Alignable's July rent report is being released based on a poll that conducted among 3,553 small business owners, shows that rent struggles are severe for several small business sectors, including transportation, that's trucking companies and car services, restaurants, retail shops, and beauty salons. What's the cause? Rent hikes, labor costs, the ongoing labor shortage, the high price of gas, and reduced consumer spending are all combining to create economic stability. Now listen to these numbers on businesses that are having problems just meeting their rent. Recovery rate, this makes me angry. The recovery rate for small businesses is at an all-time low of just 25%. That means 75% of small business owners have yet to earn the same monthly revenues they generated prior to COVID. 75% of small business owners have yet to earn the same monthly revenues they generated prior to the great COVID freakout by the Thomas Dobbs, the Anthony Faucis, the Tate Reeves of this country. 75% of businesses have not recovered from this. You know, you go up and down Main Street, that is huge. And the more we have learned in the rearview mirror of this thing, none of these mitigations, none of these things, none of these measures that were imposed on small businesses amounted to a hill of beans. The United States still had, according to their numbers, one of the worst records on COVID deaths and hospitalizations in the world. And yet 75% of small business owners are still struggling to try to get back to pre-COVID levels. 46% of small business owners say they're paying higher rent now than they did 6 months ago. 45% of restaurants. Now listen to this. 45% of restaurants, this is up 7% just from June, and 44% of retailers, that's up 9% from June, couldn't afford their July rent. Almost half of the restaurants in this country could not afford their rent. 40% of salons couldn't make rent in July. That's up 15% from 25% in June. 48% of small businesses and transportation didn't have enough cash to pay July's rent. And this is what's been going on with these small businesses. I don't if you've never owned a small business, you may not quite understand how it works. It's always funny to me when I've owned businesses, either my employees or, you know, people you'll meet will just automatically assume you're wealthy. I think this is especially prevalent on the left. They believe if you're the owner, you know, you're able to exploit your way, to massive wealth. Anybody who's owned a small business knows day to day it is the peaks and the valleys of life on steroids. It just doesn't, you can pick up a big account. It's just the greatest day. You go out for a two martini lunch. The next week you could lose an account equally as big or bigger. So being a small business owner is full of all its hurdles. But the government across the board, again, these are local governments, state governments, and federal government, has put up so many hurdles in front of businesses when it came to COVID that they can now not afford rent. These are small and medium-sized businesses. Trust me. Some of these big retailers, they can afford their rent. They may decide to close down to shore up profitability to make sure that their shareholders are well taken care of. And that's fine. That's a business unto itself. But they've been at the trough of endless free money for decades, while small business owners out there, your Main Street businesses, are just absolutely struggling. 45% of restaurants and 44% of retailers could not afford their July rent. You need to go out and support your local small businesses if you want to keep any semblance of community and any semblance of, you know, a successful small town or community like that. This is amazing. We know what's happened. Truckers. There was a story the other day. I'm kind of waiting to follow up on it before I even reported on it. There's a company that closed down that was factoring receivables for trucking companies. And basically what that means is if the trucker gets a contract for a haul, they can actually submit this contract to a company and they'll front them a big percentage of the money. And this allows them to go ahead and buy the gas and pay the driver and do all those other things on this loaned money. Most trucking companies are not out there with a giant account full of a bunch of cash to pay everybody and pay gas. They're all working on credit lines. One of these companies that did the factoring that provided these credit lines to, at last count, they said at least 350 different small trucking companies had gone belly up. It was two brothers, and apparently they were just squabbling and came in one day, and all the employees showed up for work, and they all got fired, and they closed the door. 350 trucking companies out there have no idea how they're going to make it. Now, this is just one thing, and it sounds like it's an interpersonal squabble among family members running the business. How petty do you have to be to put your entire company under, fire all of your employees, and leave 350 truckers, small trucking companies out there on the hook, not knowing how they're going to get their loads where they need to be? But, you know, I've always been worried about a trucking credit crisis when it came to trucking. That was the whole reason I bought prepared food. It wasn't for the zombie apocalypse. It wasn't just for an ordinary recession. I bought food because after the 2008-2009 financial crisis, I realized how vulnerable we are to problems with the credit markets. And if the truckers stop moving because they are so heavily reliant on the credit markets, we got about, what do they say, 3 days worth of food is in the grocery stores? And I got to tell you, I could see it coming, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to head to the grocery store and, you know, I'm not wrestling with the nut jobs over toilet paper and mac and cheese in the grocery store. So I bought about 6 months worth of food a while back. This financial crisis, should it come anytime soon, will be right on time, because I don't know how much longer I've got left on my storable food. Probably another 10 years. I need to eat it between now and then. So if a financial crisis comes, I'll be really prescient. But we know the truckers have had problems. They're coming after the farmers now. And now we've got all of these restaurateurs, all these retailers. And again, these are small businesses, not the big ones. Amazon's expanding. Actually, they are laying off. Amazon's laid off a bunch of people, too. The economy is definitely slowing, but it is these small local businesses that are having real struggles out there. And this is all created by, this is our political class. Whether it started to kick this off with the situation with COVID, where they printed up endlessly money in both the Trump and the Biden administrations. Now the inflation, it is just, you know, it's this 1-2 punch. They shut these businesses down forced them to micromanage their occupancy. Thank you, Tate Reeves. On Tuesday, you're allowed to have 25% of occupancy in your restaurant. The next Monday, we may let you have 50%. Oops, we got a spike in hospitalizations, back down to 25% occupancy. This is what Tate Reeves did. There was a website you could go to during COVID where they had each kind of daily update. Today, your restaurant can serve at 25% capacity. They said these things. Like there was some kind of a science behind it. We know now there was no science. Has there been any apology from Tate Reeves or any of these other people on the local level, on the state level, on the federal level? Has there been one single apology to all of these small business owners? Hey, you know what? We really bossed you around pretty hard. Matter of fact, we went out and arrested some of you people who didn't obey these rules, and it turns out these rules were completely worthless. Has there been one apology from any of these people? And now we've got almost half of restaurants can't make their rent. So they had the 1-2 punch of that, and the reaction from the government, from their incredible overreaction to COVID and printing money, now they're dealing with the inflation. They're getting out of COVID, back to full occupancy, trying to recover from the initial injury, and bam, the inflation comes and smacks them across the face, and now they can't make their rents. And as I say, if you've never owned a small business, it's not an easy thing to just give up on. You put a lot of your heart and soul and effort. You hire people and you feel an obligation to those employees to continue to provide them an ability to earn a living. It's not something you just go, oh, well, that didn't really work. I guess I'm just going to close shop. You've got a lot of money invested. You've got a hell of a lot of time invested. And you've got other people involved that are depending on you to provide them with a job. You stick through the hard times. And these small business owners that have gone through the 1-2 punch of COVID and now inflation that are struggling to stay open. And just adding insult to injury, now they're looking at increasing taxes. This headline here, Americans buying more essentials at dollar stores. Americans are increasingly relying on dollar stores to feed their families as inflation has driven grocery store prices up by as much as 12.2%. Grocery sales at discount stores spiked 71% between October 2021 and June 2022. The analytics firm InMarket found, while sales of the same items in grocery stores dropped by 5%. Shift comes as 61% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, according to a Lending Club report. And affordability-branded chains like Walmart warn prices won't be dropping anytime soon. Look, this does not end well. Let me just go ahead and tell you. If you're buying your groceries for your family at the dollar store, hey, look, if you've got a budget and times are tough, I get it. I understand. Everybody understands because I constantly point this out. All you Republicans and you Democrats, you're all paying the higher prices. Blacks and whites paying all the same high prices because you think you're on different teams, but you're all getting screwed by the same people. But if you are feeding your family from these stores, you know, I do a health show. I'll do it tomorrow between 10 and 11 o'clock. When I walk into a dollar store, the first aisles you usually go by are the aisles of cans and packages and bags and sodas and all of this stuff. You are slow killing your family to be eating at these dollar stores. You better find, there better be some other way you cut cost rather than getting all of the food that you want from a dollar store. It is a nutritional desert in there. This is actually going to end up increasing healthcare costs if we continue down this path. I don't know, this people shopping at dollar stores for food, this is a real disaster to the Mike Madison Show here, because not only is, again, more insult to injury, we're going to be getting sicker if this is the way we go. Save your money. Go to the farmer's market. I'll be right back. I'm looking at my notes to finish up. I've only got a couple minutes this hour, and I'll come back next hour. We're going to look at, you know, Pelosi's making this trip to Taiwan. One of the big things about Taiwan to Americans is that's where so many of our semiconductors are made, and we just had this CHIPS Act passed. And there was a story out yesterday. I mean, you want to know how incompetent, evil, corrupt Washington, D.C. is. I'm going to tell you a story, a very interestingly timed story about South Korea that came out just yesterday on the heels of passing this CHIPS Act. And then I'm going to ask the question again. So if you want to call in next hour, 601-879-0002, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line on funding this government? All the people out there that are just, I hear conservatives say it all the time, I'm a law-abiding taxpayer. It's like it's a, some kind of a badge of honor. I pay my taxes, they should pay theirs. I'm a fine American. I'm a taxpayer. I mean, wait till you get a load of this story out of South Korea on the cusp of this CHIPS Act. I got to ask you. There's got to be a line somewhere, and I'm gonna. There's another tax that I started thinking about today that I don't think people have thought about. We'll do all that next hour. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. Phone number 601-879-0002, because I'm going to put out a question here in just a little bit. When it comes to taxation, kind of one of my focal points for this show, year in and year out, because I'm just wondering, is there anything you wouldn't fund? Is there anything that would just be so egregious that you just say, no, I'm just not doing it. April 15th, be damned. I'm just not sending any more money to this criminal organization in Washington, D.C. At the risk of maybe getting in some trouble. We're going to get in some trouble. Which is, we're actually, because we should at least all admit it, we're scared of our government. That's typically not a sign of a burgeoning democracy, the freest country on earth. The champions of the free world, we're scared of our government. I was going to have tried to reach out to Lindsey Beckham today. I had her on yesterday. They had a Madison County School Board meeting last night. She texted me last night. I was trying to get her back on the show today. She's tied up. She's busy. I wanted to find out exactly what came. Apparently, the Madison County School Board has returned some of the questionable books back to the shelves. I'll try to get her on the show maybe tomorrow or on Thursday to find out exactly what was put back on the shelves. But again, it's, you know, the triumph of the machine over the parents. And the reason is because about eight of them probably show up to most of the school board meetings as most people sit on their collective cans and then complain that their children are being propagandized to at the schools. I can't believe it. Believe it. Believe it. It's because of the complete inaction of parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles across the country. But anyway, it was, you know, I don't know. We'll have to get her to clean it up and tell us what kind of books were returned to the shelves of Madison County Schools through the all-knowing school board there. But if they were challenged in the first place, they are probably some pretty concerning material. Just to let you know, when your children return to school on Thursday, those books will be available to your children. The taxpayers were robbed of, what was it, $53 billion for this CHIPS Act thing. This was, I believe, the total along with tax credits came out to somewhere around $76 billion. You know, we throw these numbers around so much, it doesn't sound like a whole lot. Mike, we give the military $850 billion. The defense contractors, I guess is a better way to put it. People finally catching on to that. But around 70, was it? I think it was 73 or $76 billion corporate bailout to chip manufacturers. It was paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. As I said, if you go to buy yourself a laptop, don't be expecting any discounts or any favors. This is just money given to these giant corporations. But this was just kind of funny to me. So the idea is, you know, we can't get chips. National security, Mike Pompeo was out there saying we needed to pass this big bailout package. You know, Mike Pompeo, Trump's Secretary of State, that was such a hero to many of the Trump supporters out there. Yeah, he was all in favor of this thing on, you know, national security. That's, national security is the thing where conservatives are supposed to click their heels together and stand at attention and not question anything. So the idea is we can't get these chips, and there has definitely been a shortage of chips. I know the car manufacturing has slowed down. There's been some other things. We've outsourced all of this stuff. Now, I will say, the idea of buying products from overseas is a much more nuanced issue than most people think about. And I'm here talking to the right. This is one of the things that the right gets a little bit wrong on some of this stuff. This idea of us buying products from other countries, be it China or Taiwan or Europe or Peru, it doesn't matter. The idea that every one of these products that we purchase from another country is a something that damages the United States. Well, that's really simply not true. If you think about it for a microsecond, you realize that if other countries can provide us with some products for cheaper than they can be made for here in America, largely because our political class has made it extremely expensive to do business in the United States. Again, our political class. But if you realize that you can save money on a whole host of products, that money that you keep in your pocket by buying cheaper products, you use at local restaurants. You use with other local services. It's not this idea that every dollar that's sucked out of the United States means it's just killing us. Now, certainly, we need a robust manufacturing base in this country. Get the politicians out of the way. Reestablish free markets in the United States. Stop printing up endless amounts of money and giving them to the giant corporations that lobby for rules and regulations that keep small competitors out. More competition makes for lower prices. Less government regulation makes it easier to start a business. There's all kinds of real solutions to this stuff, but the idea that because we buy something from offshore means that it's cost American jobs. It actually creates American jobs, too. Now, in some things, it's more important than others. And there is probably a national security component. We don't want to be... You know, the problem is that we really shouldn't have a problem buying things from Russia or China or basically anybody around the world, except that we're so belligerent. Our government is so belligerent with all these things, we turn them into enemies. I've said this a million times, and people don't, I don't think they really embrace it, don't accept it. But if you've ever owned a business, if you have a really big customer, you're really nice to those people. Even if you don't really like them, you don't really get along with them, they're not really your cup of tea. But if there's somebody that does a ton of business with you, you want to maintain a good relationship with that customer. That's what the United States could be. We could be that giant customer that everybody wants to do business with, and we deal fairly with them, and they give us good deals. And it could be, and I'm not talking about globalization where Monsanto rules over all food supplies. I'm not talking about globalism. I'm just talking about free trade. Some countries have more resources in certain areas than others. But the United States wouldn't have so many enemies if we didn't have psychopaths in Washington, D.C. going around and kicking over every anthill in the world for their own purposes, not for ours. It's not for the American people. It's not for your benefit. It's not for my benefit. It is for their benefit. They go out and create enemies, and then they point at them and say, see, we can't be buying from them. They're our enemy. Well, quit creating the enemies. Do business. As Thomas Jefferson said, peace and commerce among all nations. But we have this CHIPS Act. They've robbed the American people of $76 billion in the latest corporate welfare plan that came out of Republicans and Democrats. I believe more Republicans might have opposed this, so that's always good. But this always happens. Republicans get a real spine when they're in the minority. It's when they're in the majority, they have a problem with courage. But this story comes out, I guess, a day after our report on this CHIPS Act. Where is it here? South Korea. Nationwide inventory of chips in South Korea was up 79.8% in June from the year prior. This marks an acceleration from May's number, which saw chips rise 53.8% in the month of May. The bottom line, without getting too wonky down into the story and too detailed in the story, South Korea is just awash in chips. They've got a glut in the semiconductor industry in South Korea, one of our great allies. They better be one of our great allies. We got 38,000 of our moms and dads, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters over there supposedly protecting them from North Korea for, what is it, what's it been now, 65 years, something along those lines? But South Korea has got a glut of these chips right now. Kind of feels like, maybe the chip thing was overblown just a tad bit, just enough to get the $76, $75, $73 billion payoff to the chip manufacturers. I mean, the chips thing passes, and 2 days later, we find out that South Korea, one of our big trading partners and allies, is just, they got these things falling out of their pockets over there. How do they pay for all of these bad decisions and all of these giveaways, these corporate giveaways that they're doing? Nah, they're just going to tax the crap out of you. This was a story on Zero Hedge. Democrat, Senate Democrat proposal would hike taxes on lower incomes. I like this. They're calling it the Manchin Schumer. I don't know how they got to Joe Manchin up there in West Virginia. He's got to be one of the most powerful people in the Senate, if not the most powerful. I guarantee you, he is making it rain for West Virginia, the same way that Thad Cochran used to make it rain for Mississippi. And we've got similar results. West Virginia and Mississippi both still at the bottoms of the economic ladder. There's something about having powerful members of the Senate washing your state in cash that somehow just doesn't work. It seems to make the situation worse. But they gave Manchin something, and he has supported some of these spending bills. This particular spending bill is projected to increase taxes $11 billion more on Americans earning below $200,000 than those earning over $400,000. Joe Biden famously saying many times he'd never raise taxes on anybody making under $400,000. I've told you already, if they enact this 15% minimum corporate tax and raise corporate taxes, every single person, I don't care if you're on welfare, you're going to be paying higher taxes because those corporations are going to pass those costs on to you. Corporations don't pay taxes. People do. So Joe Biden is just, it's another in a long list of just utter lies and corruption by that man. But they're piecing through some of this climate change, this ridiculous spending bill that's going through right now. And they're finding out, yeah, the people making under $200,000, they're actually going to be taxed more than the Americans earning between $200,000 and $500,000$1 million. So it's actually these taxes are coming to you. And I ask all these questions because I really wonder, is there any line? Because I'm gonna take a break and I'm going to come back and just pose a couple of questions to you. As you think about funding this federal government, which everybody does, and many people, particularly the left, loves their government. They should never complain about a tax, right? As a matter of fact, I'm really surprised any people on the left have got really any substantial net worth. You would think they would be donating it to the government voluntarily because they think they are the solution to all of our problems. But to many people on the right, after 12 years of being propagandized to, I guess, in the schooling system and then through the sheep dipping into politics here, you believe that it is somehow a badge of honor to call yourself a taxpayer. I'm going to propose a couple of scenarios here and ask, would you fund this? Is there any line, anything that Washington, D.C. could do with your money that would just really, it would hurt your conscience to participate in such a thing? Because I think we've crossed that line decades ago, but nobody seems to really talk about it. As I've said, the Republicans and conservatives, largely they just say, well, how about a fair tax or a flat tax? I mean, I'm going to fund all these harebrained ideas. I'm going to pay for all these perks for Congress. I'm going to help fund the government, but I'd really like to do it on a postcard instead of a long form. That's like the resistance on the right. They just want to take the tax form down from 5 pages to a postcard. They want to be able to pay their tribute to the ruling class. Easy. Can I just give them my money easy? Can I have them rob me in an easy, kinder, more simplified way? That's the right's definition of resistance to this federal government. Anyway, we're going to take a look at a few of the things that the federal government does. And I'm just going to ask, because I'm really not sure what comes next. If we haven't drawn our line in the sand now, I'm not sure exactly what they could possibly ever do that would create some kind of a tax revolt in this country. Now, our founding fathers, they had a pretty tight leash on the British. What was the tax that they, was it 3%? Well, it was a couple of small taxes and a couple of bureaucratic things led to the Revolutionary War back then. They had no tolerance for this stuff. Americans now, I think we have endless tolerance for whatever they want to do to us It doesn't matter how egregious it is. And I've got a couple of examples when we come back. Stick around.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I?
I had about a 16-hour day yesterday and then did not sleep. If I got 4 hours of sleep last night, I'd be surprised. So during the break, I took some of my B vitamin complex. And now suddenly I have a bunch of energy. I'm not sure if it's the B or if it's talking about taxation. It gets me hot. I'm just curious. Here's an interesting tax these days that's been, it's been going on for years and years now, but I wonder if anybody ever thinks about. We have seen through the money printing and the artificial suppression of interest rates here in the United States, everybody cheers because you got a really cheap mortgage. You don't pay attention to the fact you overpaid for your house by about $60,000 because of that low interest rate. But anyway, one of the big casualties to this low interest rate environment in the Obama, Trump, and Biden years has been what people get on their savings. And I checked it from time to time, you know, my heart has gone out to senior citizens who are trying to take their nest egg and let it provide for them for the rest of their life through a stable investment like a CD or a savings account or some kind of a money market fund, something that's safe. And they've been getting, what, a generous, if you lock your money away for 5 years over the past 12 years, they may have given you, what, 1%? They paid you 1% on your money. Now, think about this. Just think about this, and maybe you'll understand why I get a little fired up about this stuff. Because I'm, you know, I've never seen these videos of people standing around with cameras when a mugging is taking place and nobody steps in to intervene. Doesn't that drive you crazy? You see, like, a brutal attack. We see these headlines all the time now, particularly in today's more violent world, where people are standing around taking a picture of a... Sorry, I had to cough there. Of just a brutal attack on somebody. And you say, why isn't anybody doing anything? Put down your camera and help that poor person. Well, most Americans just stand by and watch this this brutal assault on the American taxpayer. I say, can we at least talk about it? So for the past 12 years, let's just say you've earned 1% on your money. You got $100,000 socked away. You've worked hard. You've been frugal. You've done the right thing. You've saved money. And in this stable account, you've got $100,000 ready for retirement. And you earn 1% on it. So during the course of that year, particularly over the past year, you get your statement and it shows that they paid you in interest. You didn't have to do anything. Just the miracle of this 1% interest they've been paying you on your savings. You earned $1,000. So the government looks at that and says, look at you. Look at you, Mr. Fancy Pants. You didn't lift a finger for that. That's pure profit for you. You made $1,000 on your $100,000. So we're going to tax that. We're going to hit that with some capital gains tax. Now, here's the funny little thing I don't think anybody's really paying attention to that maybe we should consider. If you had $100,000 last year and you invested it and you made 1% on that money over the course of the year and the bank pays you $1,000 in interest and the government then taxes you on this gain. But here's the thing. With inflation running at 9%, you actually lost $9,100 in purchasing power on that money. Now, they did give you $1,000, so you really only lost $8,100 in purchasing power of that money you had in that savings account. The government taxes you on this gain when you actually had a fairly substantial loss in purchasing power on that account. I'm just saying. I'm just saying that seems a little odd that we're not upset about things like that. And I talked about the fact that this new tax bill is, you know, they're crunching the numbers now. Now that the narrative is out there, this is just to soak the rich, save the world from climate change crap, bail out the chip manufacturers, whatever, different bills. But and then we find out that it's actually people making under $200,000 are going to bear the brunt of a lot of these tax increases as they go through, as they're parsing through these bills. Maybe that's why they're hiring the 80,000 new IRS agents. They realize they're about to start really, you know, at a time when inflation is already hurting people, they're going to start raising taxes across the board. people might not really even have the money to pay these things. They're going to need some more enforcers out there, aren't they? And I played the clip yesterday of Dana Lash and Ted Cruz talking about this. And I asked the question, when Ted Cruz is returned to power in the Senate after the midterms, will they fire all of these new agents? Will they abolish the IRS? Yet to be seen, but don't get your hopes up. But I keep asking, what line would you draw before you say no more? Spending on the New Deal, so doesn't Green New Deal, doesn't seem to have done it. I don't hear anybody on conservative talk radio or anywhere going, look, we're just not, enough is enough. We're not doing this. So bear with me here. I'm going to think of a, let's think of a really, really extreme example of what they might take money out of your paycheck for and the way that they might use it. Let's just do a hypothetical here. Let's say, I'm just trying to think of something really extreme that people would really get fed up with. Let me think. What if the federal government stole money from every single one of your paychecks and they gave it to global pharmaceutical companies? And they used the entire human, they used this money given to these pharmaceutical giants to run a massive experiment on the human race, particularly in the Western world. And this experiment was killing and maiming hundreds of thousands of citizens. And at the same time, this same federal government that you fund with your taxpayer dollars not only facilitated this massive experiment that was responsible for the death and maiming of hundreds of thousands of people, some of them children, but the same federal government that you're funding also grants that company complete liability protection for doing such a thing. I'm just saying, just as a hypothetical, I'm just trying to kind of think outside the box here. Would that be enough to where Americans would just go, you know what, I think I'll keep my money. I'm good. Not going to keep participating in this particular thing. I mean, if they took your money and they experimented on children, let's say down to, 6 months old. Like they were taking toddlers. And the government was giving money to pharmaceutical companies with complete liability protection to actually experiment on American toddlers. Would that be something where people would say, that's it, I'm out of here? How about funding? I'm just thinking of these hypotheticals. I'm just trying to figure out if there is a line where Americans finally have just had enough and they say no more. Maybe the federal government takes money and creates this big bureaucracy. They call it the, Department of Justice. And this big bureaucracy that people, and I'm talking largely to people on the right, that people on the right fund and that big organization that your tax dollars creates then labels you a domestic terrorist because you showed up to a school board meeting, let's just say. Would that be enough to really get people kind of fired up? Again, I told you, I know what happens when the right gets fired up about taxation. They call for a fair tax or a flat tax. They're still going to fund all of these things. They just want it to be done in a simpler way, you know, a kinder way. You don't have to punch me in the face. Can't you just tickle me under the arm when you're robbing me? And I mean, I'm just, what insult, what attack on the American people. And now they're going to raise your taxes into an inflationary recession. I got to tell you, every dollar that you send to the federal government is becoming a little bit more valuable to the people out there right now because it takes more of these Fed bucks to go out and buy a gallon of gasoline or a gallon of milk. So all of this theft, it starts to kind of add up when you got 61% of Americans right now apparently living paycheck to paycheck. Their taxes are going to go up while their prices are going up, while they're losing their jobs. And As I say, I'm an observer of this system. So I don't carry water for Republicans or Democrats. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to love Trump to hate Biden. I just can't stand Joe Biden. I just realize he's the worst president we've ever had, and he's a dementia patient, and dancing us around World War III and helping to destroy the economy. But it doesn't mean that I carry any water for Donald Trump. Matter of fact, I've spared everybody quite a big Trump segment, as he has claimed plausible deniability on the Saudi stuff. This has been notes I've been carrying for about 3 days now. I'm just not going to get to that today. Anyway, you know, it wasn't the wars. We know the line is not drawn at funding endless wars that kill millions of innocent people around the world. We know that's okay. Americans are willing to be robbed for that. This includes the death and dismemberment of hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops. Now, the deaths are in the thousands. The injuries, everything from mental to physical, are in the tens of thousands. Americans are okay funding those things. As a matter of fact, at least last I checked, a lot of people on the right actually cheer when politicians talk about the endless military spending for the American empire, so we know that that's not a red line they can cross. Really, we can conduct as many wars as we want to, attacking as many innocent people as we need to in countries that did absolutely nothing to us, and Americans are perfectly fine funding that. But these other things, taking money and giving it to chip manufacturers, taking your money and just hypothetically giving it to a pharmaceutical company to actually experiment on our children, seems like it would be a red line that a lot of people might say, you know what, I'm good. I think I'm out funding this kind of thing. Now, I know that's not easy. Takes a small degree of personal risk, doesn't it? Because we're all scared of our government. It just seems like at the very least, it should be part of the conversation. And maybe when you're considering on who you vote for in 2022, 2024, maybe this question could arise just somewhere down the line. Hey, we seem to be funding a lot of things that are completely contradictory to all of our belief system. Can we stop doing that? Can you stop taking money from me and using it to fund an organization that then calls me a domestic terrorist? Could we maybe just agree on that? If you ask some of your politicians some of these harder questions, you might see some change. I'm just saying. Seems to me some red lines have been crossed. Maybe I'm just the only one noticing. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'm the Jimmy Dore on the right. Jimmy Dore, the comedian I talk about often, who just brutally savages the left and the Democratic Party. But he's a leftist, and he just realizes how corrupt the system is. I come on the radio here, and I attack the right from what I think is the right, from the what would be considered probably extreme conservatism, you know, keeping all the money that you earn. This is somehow radical in Republican circles now. This is viewed as unrealistic, Mike. It's weird to me, but anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to spear another thing, belief that the right holds. That's what I do. I don't know why. There's probably something. If you put me on a couch with a licensed psychotherapist, I would imagine they would uncover some things that make me so so belligerent. This will kind of be in, I guess we'll kind of kick off a Tech Tuesday segment with this, because this is a technology trend that is coming, and it is one of the most dangerous ones out there. And I'm going to tell you where it's really getting a big kickstart right now, and this is where the right might get mad at me. Israel is not your friend. Now, you can love the Israeli people, like you should really love all people. I certainly wish no ill will on Israeli people or Jewish people. As I said, I've got a little street cred here. 4 years, I dated a Jewish girl, went to plenty of nights of temple with her family. But thinking that the U.S. is somehow better off by constantly carrying water for the Israeli government, I wouldn't carry water for the German government. Germany's, oh boy, their economy is in a nosedive. Strange how Joe Biden caused that. I haven't figured that out, but I'm sure somebody can explain it to me. But anyway, I don't care if it's the government of Peru or the government of Vicksburg. I'm just not a, you know, governments don't solve problems. Governments create problems and then tell you they're the solution to the problem that they created. I'm hip to that game. But there is a There's a large contingency on the right that believe that really all allegiance is due to the United States and Israel. Let me tell you what Israel, the Israeli government's doing to their people. I ran across this. There's a great financial analyst out there. Her name is Lynn Alden. And she sent out this tweet. Israel is tightening their ban on using physical cash above certain thresholds, including between private citizens. She went on to say, I think this trend will probably continue to other countries over time. And I want to, you know, preface this, too. Remember, this is the same Israeli government that offered up all of its people to this vaccination program and really draconian mask requirements and shutdowns in Israel. This Israeli government, again, I'm not talking about supporting the Israeli people. I'd like to go to Israel. I think it'd be a great trip. But it's this idea that, you know, our government is tied at the hip with Israel's government, and we need to defend them at whatever cost, because Israelis are always the, you know, the white knight on the horse, like us. It's just the two of us against the world. The Israeli government is every bit as bad as the U.S. government, from what I can tell. And if you don't believe me, listen to this. Under the new law, any payment to a business above $1,700 must be made using alternative methods such as digital transfer or a debit card. This is in Israel. That bastion of democracy. It's actually not a democracy. Trading between private citizens in Israel who are not listed as business owners will be limited to $4,360 in cash. This is another step in Israel's fight against the use of cash. Previously, cash up to the amount of $3,200 could be used in business deals. Quote, "We want the public to reduce the use of cash money." That is from Tamar Brasha, who is in charge of executing the law on behalf of Israel's tax authority. He told the media line, quote, "The goal is to reduce cash fluidity in the market." Now, why would they do that? Here's what they say. This is how they'll roll it out here in the United States, too. The police will be involved in this as well. Mainly, this is, again, back to Tamar, the guy in charge of executing the law on behalf of Israel's tax authority, mainly because crime organizations tend to rely on cash. By limiting the use of it, criminal activity is much harder to carry out. So Israel, the Israeli government, after subjecting its people to a mass genetic therapy experiment that is not going well there. This is the Israeli government, right? The ones we fight wars for. The ones that we have dedicated our blood and treasure to defend, that we send billions of dollars each and every year, and that most conservative talk show hosts say, yeah, we should. All foreign policy is bad, except for, you know, foreign policy, what is it, foreign aid. Foreign aid is really bad. Did you see what we sent? We sent $340 million to Sudan. That's terrible. We need to cut off all this foreign aid, but except for Israel. We got to keep sending $3 billion plus a year to Israel. This is the weird thing that I see on the conservative side of things. I know this is supposedly biblically rooted, but I don't know if it is the government of Israel that everybody has this allegiance to. They're abusing their own people over there. And Israel's a small country. I hope the Israeli people will rebel against this, as citizens of countries around the world should rebel against governments with these kind of draconian policies. But they are making it. You cannot make a payment to a business over $1,700 using cash in Israel any longer. They're trying to do away with cash. And you can rest assured that either these amounts will continue to come down or inflation will make them smaller and smaller. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these things that are set into policies at certain levels, they may not need to be reduced because actually the value of $1,700 is going to get smaller and smaller in Israel, just like it is here in the United States with inflation, to where that becomes just a routine transaction. And suddenly you won't be able to use cash for a routine transaction in Israel. And it is telling that it is on behalf of Israel's tax authority that they are telling you that they are going to do this. Is the tax authority really concerned with mafia-style crime, organized crime, drug dealing? No, it's the tax authorities that know if they herald us into a cashless society, they will be able to track every nickel and shekel that we spend. Israel is doing this to their own people right now. I'm just telling you. This is on top of, you know, Israel most recently has murdered an American journalist that was reporting on the problems with the Palestinians. I know, always the Palestinians are in the wrong and the Israelis are in the right. That's always the case, right? But I do know it wasn't the Palestinians who attacked the USS Liberty in the 1960s. If you don't know what that is, you might want to look it up. Carrying water for this government. I'm telling you, the Israeli government, I'm really surprised Israeli people are putting up with what's going on in their government, but I'm also surprised that Australians are putting up with Australia's government and Canadians are putting up with Canadian's government. And U.S. citizens are putting up with this one. Be right back. All right, this final segment here, and this is kind of in the vein of Tech Tuesday. It's a little weird one. It's kind of taking a tax turn. You know, I'm talking about the Israeli government. Basically, they've declared a war on cash for the Israeli people and are implementing these horrific rules about how much cash you can give to another individual. They got caps on how much money you can give to somebody in cash. It's got to be done now on a debit card or through a payment app. Some way it can be tracked, traced, because apparently to the Israeli government, every Israeli is a potential criminal. And that's really how the laws in this country are trending, too. We're all basically criminals. Well, they say you commit 3 felonies a day. We're all very suspicious people. That's why they need to search your cars. That's why they need to spy on your phones. That's why they need to read your emails and store them in some big black building in Utah. Because we're all just potential criminals. But not here in America. We've got a kinder, gentler government. Listen to this one. So this is, as I say, it's a little bit of tech news. It goes to the crypto stuff. A bipartisan bill, proposed by members of the Senate would make cryptocurrency transactions valued at less than $50 tax exempt. The Virtual Currency Tax Fairness Act of 2022, proposed by Pennsylvanian Republican Pat Toomey and Arizona Democrat Kristen Sinema, has a stated goal to, quote, simplify the use of digital assets for everyday purchases. While digital currencies have the potential to become an ordinary part of Americans' everyday lives, our current tax code stands in the way, Toomey said. This is the Republican. The Virtual Currency Tax Fairness Act will allow Americans to use cryptocurrencies more easily as everyday payments, methods of payments by exempting from taxes small personal transactions like buying a cup of coffee. What Sinema said, the Democrat, in this great bipartisan bill where they're going to let you cash out a little cryptocurrency to buy a cup of coffee and they're not going to tax you. And see, what the thing here is that cryptocurrencies have been on quite a tear for years, right? Came from portions of a penny up to $69,000 or $67,000, whatever it peaked at. It's currently now in the low 20s, I believe, last I looked at it. Kind of stabilized around $20,000. So a lot of people have gains on these things. What the government was doing was essentially if you cashed out a portion of one of your Bitcoin and you used it to buy a cup of coffee, they want to know how much of that Bitcoin you cashed out was profit. How much of a gain did you make on that cryptocurrency? Got to declare that. So we've got our Congress jumping into action. They're going to allow Americans to buy a cup of coffee with a cryptocurrency without making you account for the gains on that particular coin that you cashed out a portion of to buy that cup of coffee. According to the United States Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, when a crypto transaction occurs, it can be a taxable event if the digital asset appreciated in value due to capital gains tax rules. This bill would create a tax exemption for all transactions under the amount of $50, as well as any gains less than $50 on a personal transaction. Well, 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 well. Oh, boy, that is the, what do they call this thing? The Virtual Currency Tax Fairness Act. Now, I'm just telling you where I sit with my weird mind, my crazy weird mind that absorbed all of these things about freedom and liberty as I grew up and as I understood them. You could buy something and make some money on it, and that money was yours. You took the risk. You invested in something. It paid off. It seems to me that's supposed to just be your money. That's part of the pursuit of happiness, right? A lot of agony and defeat in cryptocurrencies these days as well. I've read stories about people who just hit home runs on cryptocurrencies last year. Then they got their tax bill this year after cryptocurrencies had taken a dive, but they're on the hook for those gains from last year. Then they have massive losses, so they can't pay their tax bill. They're basically, essentially, bankrupt because they can't pay their tax bill and the big gains from last year, even though they lost a ton this year. Oh, now, I think they'll let them write it off at $10,000 of loss per year until the end of time for some of these people who lost $1 million. Or they'll let them use it to offset another gain. You know, if they have another $1 million gain, they could use their $1 million loss to offset it at some point. But if you've lost most of your money, the chances of you having another $1 million gain aren't real good. But our politicians here, they're going to let you go out and buy a cup of coffee and, hey, knock yourself out. We're going to just look the other way. We're not going to tax you on the transaction. Come on, get out of here. Don't thank us. We're not heroes. We're just trying to restore fairness to your cup of coffee there. This is how intrusive the federal government is. They think they're doing us a favor. They never should have been in cryptocurrencies, the gains and losses on those in the first place. Got to go. See you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.